going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Spring into big savings on all Larson storm doors now at Menards. Larson doors are perfect to enjoy the fresh spring air. Whether you're looking for additional security or a screen door, we have what you need. They come in over 40 styles and 9 colors to choose from. Check out all Larson storm door options in store and find more great deals in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we continue with our expectations series today, talking about two Ravens players, one offense and one defense. Today, the two topics of our discussion are DeAndre Hopkins and Bo Braid. Joining me to do that is Dan Ibrahimi. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thank you for having me back.
Your third year doing this. You're one of the real veterans, a guy who's done this show, this expectation series pretty regularly. This is the easiest show of the year to get sold out. I put out about 35 invites for 30 spots, and people scarfed them up right away in terms of who they want. And they're, for whatever reason, about the first three people to respond all wanted Tyler Loop and Nate Wiggins. So the early bird did get the worm in that case. But in your case, you always seem to stumble into a really interesting player after the fact. You can tell us a little bit about that. And then Bo Braid seems to be a guy who might have more meaning than maybe was originally thought this year.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think this is going to be a popular one, Ken, because Bo Braid is a Maryland Terrapin. I myself am not a Maryland Terrapin. So I'm very excited to be talking about Bo Braid. Really, as you mentioned, this one is so interesting now with the unfortunate news that Ardarius Washington is going to be out for this upcoming year after getting hurt during conditioning. I believe it was his Achilles that he tore. Mm-hmm. So obviously really unfortunate for Ardarius Washington. He figured to play a huge role in the defense again this coming season. Now it really looks like Braid is going to be competing with Sanusi Kane for kind of that third safety spot, as well as some playing time on special teams. Really possibly on every special teams coverage unit off the top of my head, I would think they're trying to get snaps from Braid there.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about who Braid was in 24, first of all. But I agree with you, by the way, in terms of how you've laid this out here. Played just 11 defensive snaps during the regular season, 2 tackles, 1 miss, just not a lot to go on in total, obviously. He had 16 tackles in 115 preseason snaps, but one of the things that was very consistent about his play, and if you look back to my preseason articles on Braid, I praised him quite a bit, but the problem was he was playing extremely well close to the line of scrimmage and definitely did not have success in coverage, being in the right spot, you know, deep in the down the field and whatnot, even though he only allowed 2 catches on 7 targets for 22 yards, which certainly isn't bad. I did not see back end safety characteristics in that preseason, and I didn't see him in college either. Frankly, I thought this is a guy who's a strong safety / dime back. And the Ravens really now, with the loss of Ardarius Washington, need a free safety / split backfield, you know, safety. They need somebody who can play the back end.
Absolutely. And To be completely honest, I do think Braid is going to get a shot to take that spot. I think both he and Kane will. I'm just not really sure that either of them is really the right guy to take that spot. And I know that when you get down the safety depth chart, nothing is really going to be perfect. But in a way, Ardarius Washington's injury happened at such an interesting time, you know, well before camp opens, that there are still some decent options on the free agent market, including, if I'm not mistaken, a familiar name in Chuck Clark, who, you know, while a different player from Braid, both Clark and Ardarius Washington are, you know, either late round or undrafted safeties who have, you know, turned in pretty nice careers with the Ravens relative to their draft position or lack thereof.
Yeah, and Clark, of course, leveraged his play into not only leading the defense, you know, going into that 2019, or not going into, but taking over the reins in the 2019 season, weathering the arrival of Earl Thomas and then dealing with that, and then maintaining the red dot after that. Sorry, the green dot. But he's a guy who, you know, It was a real loss losing him to the Jets, which was unfortunate. He didn't play as well with the Jets, and he was hurt for a full season. He's available now, and honestly, he's one of those guys. I don't think he'd let the Ravens down playing on the back end and being way out of position. I don't think he's that guy. I don't think he'd fail the Ravens in that regard. And in a lot of ways, he would be ideal if he'll play for the vet minimum to be a guy the Ravens would bring in. I think they're looking for multiple things. I think they're looking for somebody who'll play for the vet minimum. I think they also would love to have this dealt with on a multi-year basis. And for that to happen, they got to use the developmental time available to them. They're not signing this guy, you know, before week four or something. They have the entire offseason to work with this new player. And it can be a guy who's in a year one player, but who's not a rookie, who's been on somebody else's practice squad last year and is now available to be signed, not under any futures contracts. I mean, there's a lot of guys like that are floating around. One name I'll toss out there, who I know he's going to be playing in Canada. We're actually going to have a little talk about Canadian football coming up, would be a Jeremy Lucien, who was here two camps ago for the Ravens, would be a guy who they could get. I'm not saying Jeremy Lucien is the only guy by any stretch that they could get in that regard. There are 20 Jeremy Luciens probably out there who might make a good half-field safety. The Ravens just got to pick one that's really some good. I think they learned, at least I hope so, from last year's acquisition of Eddie Jackson, that there are no – there could be cheap players, but there's no cheap roster spots.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, Lucien was definitely a camp and preseason darling. It's funny. I thought that was much longer ago than two seasons, but yeah, you know, I think it'll be interesting looking at what direction the Ravens do plan to go in. One thing, obviously, I know you're considering, Ken, this is always on your radar, is if they were to bring in a guy like Chuck Clark, who really wouldn't be playing special teams. He would just be filling in on the back end there. I don't really see them keeping Kane and Braid. And I think that they probably should, given as you mentioned, the loss of their key special teamers, really guys who had been there for what seems like a while, and Board, Welch, and Malik Harrison, that this is going to be a pretty new looking special teams unit this year.
Okay. Now Clark made his name with the Ravens as a special teams player. I'm not sure why he couldn't move back to being a occasional back end safety. Cause you know, he basically had the Geno Stone role. Think of it that way. He'd be coming in on third down when or whenever the Ravens are out of their base defense and they want to move Hamilton up to that slot corner position, for example. If he's playing, you know, because of that, 50 to 70% of the snaps, he's eligible. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't play special teams.
Okay. Yeah. I may have been selling him short. I to be honest, I honestly just thought that he may be a little bit too up there in age at this point to go back there, especially coming off of, I guess his big injury was 2 years ago now. And to be totally honest, I didn't follow him super closely on the Jets this past year, but, I think the Ardarius Washington injury just adds such an interesting wrinkle to this safety spot, because I think all of us are really optimistic about Starks, but I am really wondering if, you know, it's going to be like his college career when he started on a national championship defense as either a true freshman or a redshirt freshman, if I'm not mistaken. Is he going to attack the learning curve the same way in his rookie year in the NFL? I hope so, but I think having a contingency plan in place would not be a bad idea.
Okay. I'm good on both Sanusi Kane and Braid getting at least a trial. And I do think what's happened is going to force the Ravens' hand a little bit in the preseason and in camp in terms of trying out a lot of players at that position. The one guy who I don't think needs time at that position to feel it out more is Kyle Hamilton. I think you go ahead and move him up to the other positions you'd like to play him at, you know, big nickel, dime back occasionally. And I think you leave the back end to Malachi Starks to really learn the Ravens system, to whoever they want to bring in as a second guy. Now that's going to be Hamilton back there sometimes in camp, I know, but they really need to get some number one reps to players like Kane, Braid, and whoever they sign to make sure that they mesh with the unit are possible options. One thing that's really hurt the Ravens the last couple of years is they go into the season with exactly the number of safeties they think they need, and then they lose one in a game situation or a game, season or a game, and they lose one in a game situation. All of a sudden, that forces their hand to move Hamilton back to the back end. That's just such a big loss, and he's such a significant factor. I think if you have packages where you want to use four safeties, I think it means you need to activate five safeties for those games. If you have safety packages where you need three safeties, then I think you need to activate four for those games just to make sure you don't lose that value of the flexibility of Hamilton.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that is some effective risk mitigation planning for sure.
All right. Well, let's talk about Bo Braid in terms of what we need to see from him. That's like a little bit different in 2025. To me, this isn't necessarily really different because he did play plenty in the preseason last year, but availability is very important. And this happens with a lot of wide receivers, and a lot of defensive backs get soft tissue injuries, and he's got to be extremely concerned about avoiding those. You can lose your roster spot just like that if you lose playing time in camp in the preseason due to soft tissue injuries.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Staying available for him is going to be crucial, because if he is available and active on game days, he's going to be getting snaps for sure. Whether those are going to be on defense obviously remains to be seen, but I don't see any scenario at this point where he's not active for most special team snaps.
Right. He could be inactive for a game, but you're saying if he's active on game day, then he's going to be playing a ton of special team snaps. Completely agree with that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Free safety, playing the back end on a split field basis. We saw from Geno Stone, and he relied very heavily on his instincts. That's what the position demands. It doesn't really demand outstanding speed, which is probably a good thing for Braid. He's not the fastest guy, certainly in the Ravens secondary. That's not terrible. He'll be a guy who can play the position well, if he can hone his instincts and try and read the quarterback better to figure out which route he is best suited to try and impact. So it's not an easy position, certainly, to be able to figure out. But on the other hand, a position where, there's no physical limitation he has that should hold him back. He, in a lot of ways, he's built completely like a strong safety at 6 feet 209. He's a very big safety, much bigger than Starks, for example. And that should help him be the tackler that they need on the back end. But I want to see him be more than that. I want to see him be in the right place at the right time in coverage.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's skepticism about his skills in coverage is probably what caused him to go undrafted. I think as a casual follower of Maryland football, I assumed that he would get drafted coming out of college. I was really surprised when the Ravens drafted Sanusi Kane over Braid. It worked out great because now the Ravens have both, and they were able to get Braid as an undrafted free agent. But I think him just really showing that he can be serviceable in that regard as a back end safety is what's going to help him stay in this league for a long time and have the tenure of someone like Chuck Clark. Obviously different players, but I think that's something that you know hopefully he can really hone in the preseason this year after having a pretty good preseason last year, as you mentioned.
Yeah, he just turned 23 in January, so the clock's not running down for him. I mean, he's younger, I think, than Ed Reed was when he was entering his rookie year. So it's certainly an opportunity for him to take a step forward. Well, let's try and lay out some goalposts here. What's a good season for Sanusi Kane for Bo Braid from your perspective?
So I would say in a good season, he's activated for 15 or 16 games, meaning he's probably healthy for the whole season. He's activated for all of those games, and then he's proven to be a key contributor on special teams, and then plays more than 11 defensive snaps. Frankly, maybe he's not a consistent contributor on defense, but you know, as you mentioned, it's only his second year. He just turned 23. I would like to see a step forward from him on defense.
I will say I did not think his chance to make the team was particularly high before the Ardarius Washington injury, but I think that's changed. The Ravens now find themselves, instead of being one safety short, now two safeties short. And I think the pressure is going to be very high for them to try and find a serviceable back end or dime player from Braid or Kane for the packages they want to have. And they're playing it a little fast and loose, honestly, to go in the season, even if they get a veteran. If they're short a back end guy. So what I'd say is that he stays healthy for the trial as a free safety and split field guy. Excuse me. Then he notches up his special teams play to be a quality core player because he'll be in all the units, particularly with a kickoff return emphasis. I think that'll be important.
Absolutely. Yeah. On kickoff coverage and kickoff returns, I see Braid being a huge part of the Ravens' plans there. I honestly kind of see him almost teaming up with Kane in a way. I don't know if I have some kind of weird buddy cop fantasy there for what I envision from Kane and Braid moving forward. I just envision both of them being really important to those units with the loss of those key guys in Harrison, Board, and Welch. I don't know, frankly, I may be wrong on this. I don't know that the Ravens can really afford for either of them to not be a big special teams contributor. So that is kind of where I'm focusing more for Braid.
Well, they certainly have to find their special teams players. And the other requirement I have basically for any special teams player this year is that they also have to be able to make a contribution to either offense or defense. So they've got some guys who make sense. Lejonte Wester will be the return man, and he figures to make an offensive contribution. I'm thinking Tez Walker, if he's active on a weekly basis, will be a guy who contributes on special teams. And then there's some guys who are in a lot of trouble because they're not special teams players in terms of how much they contribute on defense or offense. And David Ajabo is at the top of that list as a guy who doesn't contribute much on special teams. He's on the field goal block unit. That ain't enough in and of itself. So he'd have to be a really good pass rusher for that to be all he did. And he's just not there yet in his fourth year and whatnot. So I had a little more for Braid. I think in the good season, the Ravens acquire another deep safety and possibly two more to deal with the possibility of injury. And we don't see Braid play the entire season. Now, that's still, I still think this could be at the 60th percentile where I'm thinking right now, is that Braid is at the top of the practice squad, is available for elevations, makes the team at some point later in the season. And then once he does, he should be a, you know, a relatively regular activation, but he could very well be a guy that is his first three times he plays in a game are as practice squad elevations. The Ravens wait for depth to settle out as it is wont to do. And they have room, have a roster spot made by some sort of injury where Braid finally makes the team. I could easily see that kind of a season. I don't think that necessarily be a bad thing. I don't really believe that there's a bunch of teams waiting to claim Bo Braid if the Ravens cut him. I also don't think he's any trade value. So I think, you know, you do the best you can with this player. And you know, it could be a very good season for the team if he's never needed on the back end. I mean, that alone is probably a very good thing. But if he is needed, you know, it still is a very big possibility that it might be from starting on the practice squad, getting elevated to the roster at some point, and then hopefully being ready to do whatever the Ravens ask him to.
Absolutely, yeah. If he ends up being kind of just a stash candidate and, you know, maybe, like you're saying, doesn't get that much playing time until late in the season, and then we just kind of do this song and dance again next year, I as a Ravens fan, would sign up for that. And I know Bo Braid probably has higher hopes for himself this season, but that would be a really good situation for the team, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. He would get credit for the year of service at least by being active for hopefully a handful of games here. So hopefully it wouldn't cost him too much. But obviously he does want to be on the 53. He wants to be making real NFL money and not practice squad money. I mean, just in the most practical sense, that's a big deal to players. Let's move on though and talk about what a great season is for Bo Braid.
Absolutely. So I think in a great season, it's obviously everything I said before. He has to stay healthy. He has to be activated for probably every game in this situation. And then, you know, I think I still do focus more on special teams for him, even in a great season. I would just say that he kind of gains that reputation of someone who, when the Ravens go on kick coverage or probably mostly on kick and punt coverage, you're just happy that he's out there. He kind of gives you that feeling of security. I really do think that is what I'm going to look to him for the most. And then on top of that, I would say he just does gain some run on defense and doesn't screw up too bad, frankly. And for a young undrafted free agent like Braid, that's a big ask. But in like a 90th percentile season, that's kind of what I would hope for from him.
Okay, fair enough. I set my bar at the 80th percentile, so I'm probably going to come in a little lower than you. In my great season for Bo Braid, he makes the 53. His quality special teams play makes him indispensable. And he's a regular activation on game day. I don't think any of that is secure because, I mean, they have to find five players each week to deactivate, essentially. And that can be tough to do. You have to do oftentimes some cutting and, you know, it could be Tez Walker and he are competing for a spot or it won't be an offensive lineman, but it could be a defensive lineman. Remember, they've had all these games where they've absurdly, to my point of my way of thinking, gone with four defensive linemen active when I think it's just absurdly risky. I mean, there's those kind of players on the margin. David Ajabo could be a guy this year he's fighting for activation time with. And he could win that sometimes, but it's just not a sure thing. And that's why I think this result is really very good for him. I think he gets the camp preseason trial, and it indicates that he's ready for some safety play, either on the back end or as a dime back. And we might see him at either of those spots. I think the Ravens have potentially some weakness at the weak side linebacker spot on passing downs with Teddy Buchanan that they might want to try and putty over. Buchanan wasn't a terrible coverage player in college by any stretch, but he also he could be a guy that doesn't make it at the NFL level, so we'll see how that works out. And they already have shown an indication they don't really think Trenton Simpson is the guy in terms of coverage. And he had a reputation coming out of school as pretty good. Like, he might be a good coverage guy. last thing for Braid is that he meets the Ravens standard of a primary special teams player who could step up on defense if needed. And that's something he really didn't accomplish in 24. He wasn't ready to play defense. He was ready to play special teams. And hopefully we see just a little bit more from Bo this year.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think that's a very fair assessment. And yeah, you know, not diving in too deep on Teddy Buchanan, but as long as he's better than Kenny Young, I'll be happy, because that was my kind of immediate post-draft Ravens comp for him.
All right. Well, that's a shame.
it might just be, you know, the body type and the West Coast linebacker, not actual West Coast formation, just coming from, I believe Kenny Young was UCLA and Buchanan's Cal.
Yep. So yeah, Young ended up being a not terrible player briefly with the Rams, but yeah. You know, when your GM goes out of his way to talk about what an idiot you are and make it very clear who's talking about dumping an ice cream cone on his carpet, yeah, it's something that you really, that's not a reputation you want to carry with yourself in the NFL.
Yeah, I had remembered him being included as a literal throw-in in the Marcus Peters trade, but I had forgotten about the ice cream cone story. That was not a great look.
All right, let's move on and talk about a player that I think a lot of people tuned in to try and hear about, and of course we're talking about him second. DeAndre Hopkins signed a one-year contract for $5 million plus incentives. It could take it to $6 million. Void years are included to take it through 2029. I think that's a mirage for folks. He's not going to stay with the Ravens for probably more than 1 year. It's conceivable that he'll be a 2 year Raven, but the Ravens have a lot of developing wide receivers that I think the good answer for a DeAndre Hopkins season for him as a player might be very different from what's good for the Ravens.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, this is a really interesting one. I am, I will come out and say I am very biased on this. I've been a huge DeAndre Hopkins fan over 12 years now, which feels really weird to say. I was pounding the table for the Ravens to trade up for DeAndre Hopkins in the 2013 draft after the most recent Super Bowl win. And I'm probably wrong on draft predictions a lot more than I'm right. But I think if the Ravens had done that, it would have avoided the Matt Elam experience, and that those immediate post Super Bowl years would have been a lot different and a lot better for Joe Flacco.
How many spots would they have moved up? Where was he drafted?
So he was drafted 27th by the Texans, and the Ravens were obviously picking 32nd. Yeah. So, I mean, conceivably, if they moved up, I don't know, between 6 and 8 spots, they would have been able to draft him. And that draft class, I mean, now it, you know, you can really look back on it completely, was really, really bad. Very minimal talent. So really the worst one in recent memory. So I think that was a prime year to trade up. I don't think they would have had to give up that much to do it. And he was just kind of someone who very mysteriously fell in that weak class. I think Tavon Austin went very, very high, maybe pick 8 or 11, somewhere in that range. And obviously was an electric college player, but DeAndre Hopkins was the mold of the all pro receiver that he ended up earning 5 times over in his career.
I do. One of the things I remember about DeAndre that was just part of his time was his time on Hard Knocks with the Texans when Carly Lloyd came in to kick field goals against Vince Wilfork. Do you remember that? And then he really wanted to go over and meet Carly Lloyd very badly.
I don't remember that, but I remember from Hard Knocks when he went up against D'Angelo Hall, and that turned into a viral YouTube clip because DeAndre Hopkins was just out there absolutely destroying Hall. And I don't think Hall made the Hall of Fame, but I mean, he was a franchise corner for years. So that was a pretty cool accomplishment for Hopkins.
All right. Very cool. So Hopkins will be 33 in June. You know, in some ways he represents the old wide receiver treadmill that the Ravens have had. But this is, I feel good about this signing and very different from a lot of the past ones with too many to name, but the most recent one that I really hated at the time was Odell Beckham. And it was just possibly the right player at way the wrong price. In Hopkins' case, I think it's likely the right player at almost certainly the right price. So you're not or likely the right place. Let's put it on the same level in both. He's not going to completely ruin the Ravens' salary cap in the future. They're paying for most of it now and obviously in 2026 when these void years come due. So they are front loading or back loading a little bit of it, but he's also not a guy who's going to come in and displace Bateman or Flowers. And I think unlike Beckham, he understands that he's not here to be a guy who's going to take a ton of snaps. I think they've probably had discussions about him, about some very key factors about what they want from him as a player, both in terms of how often he's on the field and also coming back as a run blocker into prominence, something he did well early in his career. And he's been absent from his game the last few years.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. I think setting expectations is definitely a really just kind of a big part of whether Hopkins is going to have a successful season here or not. I think that the Beckham signing is really interesting to look back on. He was obviously incredibly overpaid here, especially relative to what he ended up being here, and then immediately after he left, when obviously was not able to really produce either. Obviously there were some extracurriculars there that was, you know, the Ravens probably paid him more in order to entice Lamar into re-signing. I think that was kind of part of the calculus back then. But yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that Hopkins definitely has a reputation as a team player. Early in his career, the quarterbacks the Texans were throwing out with him, I mean, some names that come to mind right off the top of my head are Matt Schaub and Brock Osweiler. And I have very vivid memories of Hopkins going into press conferences, defending some incredibly lackluster quarterback play. And that just kind of really, stuck him in my mind as a team first guy.
That is really good, because wide receivers, they can turn on their quarterbacks pretty quickly.
Absolutely. He's been on some really good teams too. He played on four division winners in Houston and one in Kansas City. Obviously, probably wishes there was a little more postseason fruit born from that, especially before last year. But you know, really has individual success. Like I said, as a five-time All-Pro guy, and then you know, Houston wasn't exactly a winner before he got to town. So he, you know, built a great rapport with Deshaun Watson before that spectacularly blew up. And then, you know, he has hopped around to three teams since he left Houston. But yeah, I think this is a smart signing. I do. I was definitely a little bit concerned about it at the time. Certainly not because of the price tag. I think I did have dreams of Cooper Kupp possibly coming to the Ravens at the right price. That obviously didn't happen. He went home to Washington State to play for his Seahawks. But yeah, you know, I'm definitely coming around to this signing.
All right, Hopkins, a guy at this point who lives off his route running, his ability to use his size, box out ability. In 2024, he didn't have a bad year. Of course, he's playing under fairly favorable circumstances, but 7.6 yards per target is a little bit low, but that's what happens to possession receivers as they get older. A 70% catch rate was just a tick off his career high, as was his 60% success rate. Now, you can put a lot of that on Mahomes, but he definitely had a solid year in terms of moving the chains. Was a good possession receiver both in Tennessee and Kansas City after leaving Houston. But it has been 5 years since he's made a Pro Bowl. That was last happened in 2020. And you kind of hope that receivers understand that point in terms of their role with the team. I think Hopkins probably does. I think if I look back at Dez Bryant, I don't think he got it at all. I don't think Deontay Johnson gets it now. There's a whole bunch of receivers who are like, this isn't working for me. I need to move on. You're not getting me the football. And I don't think those kind of receivers who are, you know, basically they're most concerned about their next contract. I don't think those receivers are ever going to do well with Lamar Jackson. But with the Ravens, I should say.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple $1,000s in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/andysgirls or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andysgirls.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Because the offense is centered around Lamar Jackson. It's not centered around who gets the who's the target. It's centered around how does Lamar Jackson distribute the football most effectively? And they don't ever have a WR1 guy anymore, at least not during the Monken era.
Absolutely. Yeah. I am confident that Hopkins is going to be a more successful veteran receiver than some of the recent experiments, namely Beckham, Bryant, DeSean Jackson, certainly Deontay Johnson. But I think a huge part of playing in this offense, as you mentioned, centered around Lamar, is knowing that, the volume may not always be there for these guys. But for someone like Hopkins, the biggest thing about him, and I know this is a little bit of a cliche, the defense has to account for him no matter what. He's DeAndre Hopkins. He's a great route runner, as you mentioned. He can go over the middle and move the chains. If you throw it towards him, he's very, very unlikely to drop it, which is a huge plus. So yeah, I think this is a really good marriage between team and player at this point. And yeah, I'm excited. I think he played 10 games for the Chiefs last year in the regular season, and he finished third on the team in receiving yards, tied for third. He actually tied with Noah Gray, but I think that's about right. He was behind Kelsey and Worthy. Patrick Mahomes was throwing him the ball, and there were a ton of injuries that kind of helped elevate him up the depth chart. That's obviously a big reason why they got him. But yeah, I think that this can be a really, really good fit for him.
So some of the things I want to see from him in 25, I want to see ability on extended plays. I think we certainly had some of that with Mahomes in terms of ability to get open late. I probably want to see increased per snap productivity with a quarterback like Jackson. I think he has the chance for it. He doesn't get a lot of garbage targets, that he gets targets that are of high quality because they're selected essentially as with the run as a alternative at the time. So one of the great things about Lamar Jackson is he doesn't really have a check down guy a lot of the times because his check down is taking off with the football. You can think of that from the receiver's point of view as well, is you might end up with less craptastic contested targets because Lamar Jackson is going to try to run for the first down if that's his alternative to throwing a ball into traffic to try and make a completion. So hopefully avoid some marginal targets that way. And then the biggest thing I want to see is enthusiastic run blocking. I want to see him leading that wide receiver room in terms of dictating that everybody be a good run blocker. They've got one of the best run blockers in the entire National Football League among wide receivers in Tylan Wallace. I'm sure he'll get playing time because of that this year, because he picked up a huge snap share at the end of last season when they really needed it from him, and he did very well. But Tylan Wallace does not have the gravitas as a leader by example. And it always rings a little hollow when the coaches talk about, you see this guy over here? He's trying to block all the time. And, you know, that's why he's valuable. If you guys do that, you'll get a better chance. And every other receiver in that room is thinking, look, if I catch the football, I'm going to get paid. I'm not getting paid for my run blocking. But if DeAndre Hopkins does it, by example, different matter entirely. You know, that a guy who's willing to subject himself to the system a little bit, to the system is going to be a much more potent argument for the others to fall in line.
Absolutely. Definitely a big lead by example situation. And it especially, I mean, I think run blocking from receivers is always important, but in this offense and with this quarterback and Lamar Jackson, it is going to be amplified a little bit. Still a relatively young receiver room, not super young, not like the Green Bay Packers lately, but still pretty young and a lot of, you know, guys who figure to be somewhat impressionable. And yeah, DeAndre Hopkins setting the tone with by going out and really putting an emphasis on run blocking would be great. I also wanted to add, I think that sometimes when an acquisition like this is made, we tend to think about sort of what the surroundings are supposed to be. We tend to immediately jump to Hopkins as the third receiver behind Flowers and Bateman, because that's what it's supposed to be. I also like to think about what Hopkins would be like if he is elevated up into that number two wide receiver spot should Flowers or Bateman get hurt. And I wouldn't be comfortable with that per se, because that's asking him to do a lot, but I would be more comfortable with him in that role than some of the other older receivers that the Ravens have trotted out in recent years that we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I'll buy that. I mean, I think he could step in for Bateman at the X if that's what was required of him. He has the route running skills to make use of that space budget. It's not the optimal solution. It just isn't. And frankly, I think one of the things that Hopkins gives you in his current state that adds marginal value to who he actually is as a receiver is that the other team isn't really sure where he's going to line up. And that may mean you have a slot corner on him, or you get a, you know, a matchup differentiation that really favors him in terms of, you know, height and length in a way that you might not otherwise, you know, be sure to get. But Hopkins, yeah, Hopkins, the big slot receiver, is dangerous. I think, you know, this is a fresh legs offense. I keep making that point, you know, basically show after show among these types, is that there's eligible receivers could change as much as they ever have for the Ravens or more on a down by down basis. I think that one of the things that Monken will try and do is really tire out opposing defenses by continually switching up the eligible receivers. And defenses get very frustrated with that on long drives. Very frustrated. You can be running the football every time, but if you've got guys who are coming in fresh, and even the wide receivers, you know, you have Tylan Wallace is on two plays out of three or half the time, and he's making good run blocks because he's well rested. That's frustrating to a defense too. It's not just the fact that, and they'll never admit it. They'd rather be boiled in oil than admit that, well, Tylan Wallace is right on top of me in level three because I, you know, he was too quick for me and he was this. And but they it is extremely frustrating, obviously, to in general be tired out by an offense, but it's not just the defensive linemen who suffer. That is my point.
That's a great point. And to your point, I hope Todd Monken is thinking along those lines too. I think that's part of the reason why they brought Tylan Wallace back. You know, he's shown some big playability these past couple years with a huge clutch for, I believe it was a fourth quarter touchdown grab against the Bengals this past year in a crucial divisional win. And then obviously a walk-off punt return touchdown in overtime against against the surging Rams two seasons ago. So I totally agree. I think trotting out, you know, fresh receivers is going to be really helpful. And Tylan Wallace, Tez Walker, both of them are going to play big roles in that. I think Tez Walker's rookie year was interesting. Definitely struggled to stay on the field, whether it was health or getting activated. He had that one really memorable touchdown catch. I can't remember who that was against, but yeah, you know, you hope the addition of DeAndre Hopkins opens it up for guys like Walker and Wallace.
That's a really good point, by the way, because I guess let me put it in question format. Let's do it this way. Would it be a bad thing if DeAndre Hopkins lost his job? You talked about him moving up. Would it be a bad thing if he got outplayed by Tez Walker or LaJonte Wester such that he lost snaps?
No. I mean, not in my opinion. I think you had actually posed a similar question to me a few years ago about Adisa Isaac versus Ojabo, and that kind of trained my brain in thinking this way. I think the answer kind of comes down to, because Walker and Wester have more control, you would rather the arrow is pointing up with them after this year and have them under control than with Hopkins. You know, if he has a great year, that's great. That's why we signed him. But we're not guaranteed to have him next year. He's only under contract for this year. So yeah, no, I would agree. And you know, Tez Walker was a really interesting draft pick. He has shown the ability to be that big play guy. It's really just been a matter of him staying on the field. So I think a big season from Tez Walker would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And there's a couple of ways it could happen, but you know, the easiest way to probably see it happening is injury. And the injury could come to really Bateman and Hopkins are the two players who'd be most likely that their injury created time for Walker. And it's also possible that's going to create more snaps for Tylan Wallace also, but Walker would be the player who has not only the team control, because I you know, I'm with you entirely on that. And very nice to hear you say it exactly that way. But the other thing is that when you get an up arrow from a young developing player, that has more value to it, because you think it should be there and that growth is real. For a player like, you know, Walker or Wester, who are, you know, just starting out, we don't exactly know where to set the floor and the ceiling for these players for 25, 26, 27. We learned where to set the floor and the ceiling for a player like David Ajabo for three consecutive years. And unfortunately, floor and ceiling both have dropped pretty significantly, frankly, since the that first year of his. So it is very important. You want development. You want to be able to see and validate the development that's going on. And yes, of course, you always want a first contract player to outplay a veteran one contract or 1 year player. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, this front office by a lot of measures has done a great job since they've come kind of into power in 2020, I believe it was. And I apologize for not having this exact stat offhand, but I believe that since 2020, the Ravens have drafted the most receivers by quite a lot. And, you know, I think a lot of our fans would be happy that attention has been paid to the position, and, you know, the importance of the position has been acknowledged. But, you know, maybe would have been nice to hit on one or two more of those picks, so that that the attention could have been turned elsewhere.
Bateman and Flowers, pretty good paydays for being first round picks, though. I don't think there's a lot of complaining to do about those two, frankly. Bateman,
his
production has come a little later, but I guess if I had a complaint, it'd be that some of the production in the mid rounds has not been all that great. And that was true of Ozzie's last draft too in 2018, was that he missed. You know, the picks he missed on basically were those mid-round wide receivers, Lasley and Jaleel Scott,
yeah,
who ended up not being anybody. But the rest of everybody else contributed to the Ravens in one way or another, or ended up being a very good player with another team.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's great point for sure. And yeah, Bateman's arrow has been quite odd. I was very critical of him after the first couple years, and then I did not want to pick up his fifth year option or re-sign him, but then, you know, I think it was 3 years, $15 million. I think most of us were pretty on board with that as a very team friendly deal that he very much exceeded expectations for last season.
Yeah, I mean, now he's got, frankly, one of the most valuable second contracts in the entire NFL for a wide receiver, and if you're really looking at what player has the most trade value, that's where you start. I mean, is who's got the best contract. I did want to go over one other topic here before we go on to a good and a great season for DeAndre Hopkins. And that is, the Ravens are at a crossroads in terms of what this offense is going to look like in the future. And they've largely put themselves there by not addressing the tight end position in this draft via some combination of a trade, whoever that might be. And I'm not saying that Isaiah Likely, I wanted to see him gone. I'm just saying that it would have been easier if they could have drafted a tight end and unstacked their contracts, which are all coming due at the same time. But now they've got Ricard, Kohler, Andrews, and Likely all coming due at the end of this year. There are multiple ways you could address that. You can address that with a mad scramble to fill those same positions. And it won't be too hard to get Ricard back. He'll be cheap, and it'll be a similar deal I think he gets next year after this year, if they want him back, if he's still, you know, meeting the standard. The three tight ends, I think all three of them could be gone. And they're going to have to try and find a way to sign some of them. But now this offseason would have been the time. And you got three guys whose future is still up in the air as of now. We just gave a bunch of money to Derrick Henry. Not a bad signing, by the way. I'm okay with it, given who Derrick Henry is and was this last year. But it does restrict the amount of money they have to spend on players like Likely and Travis Jones and maybe even Tyler Linderbaum.
Absolutely. I totally agree as far as the Derrick Henry signing goes. I really was not surprised by it, especially after this past year when he, by all means, blew expectations out of the water. I think we can hope for, you know, I don't think he'll have as good of a year this year. I don't think that's a reasonable expectation, but, you know, I think we're all hoping that it's a fair contract. And, you know, just where it falls in the running back pecking order relative to his production and age is fair, in my opinion. I do wish there was a little bit more of a plan moving forward at tight end specifically. I am on board with you know, continuing this kind of pattern with Ricard. I think that it makes perfect sense for both player and team. I think at tight end the issue is pretty complicated at this point. I am a big Charlie Kohler fan, just as a fan of a fellow Big 12 team. He was awesome in college, and I would kind of argue that he hasn't really gotten the chance to show that in the NFL. Obviously, if he was showing it in practice, they would have found a way to get him more targets, but I kind of just keep going back to the fact that Likely and Andrews can't really coexist. That's just been my read on the situation. I think that that Monken has really struggled to work them into the offense at the same time. I would have liked to go forward with one of them this year. I would have preferred going forward with Likely, but you know, trading one of them would have been much more to my preference. Obviously, Likely carries more trade value coming on a rookie deal, but they are going to find themselves, no matter what, in an interesting position at the end of this season at the tight end position.
It is something they could still make a move at the trade deadline. I'm looking at the Ravens schedule, and the front loading of it is, if they did get off to a really bad season this year, really bad start, they might not consider themselves out of it no matter what at the trade deadline, but they could make a trade of Likely or Andrews at that point, given that they're in their final weeks of their current contract. But what I'm really talking about now is something that's slightly different. I didn't get a chance to set this up all the way. The Ravens have a chance to reshape the offense into more of an 11 offense for 26 and beyond, and go to a one tight end system. So if they lose, let's say, both of the big tight ends, they re-sign Ricard, and maybe they re-sign Kohler as well. So they have their inline guy who could maybe do more. They have Ricard again. They draft another tight end, and it'll probably be one of their higher draft picks goes to tight end if they're going to go that way. And then they move forward in 26 as more of an 11 offense. They'll do, you know, much more spreading of the field. But I think that option is available to them. I think they know it. And I think that it's a consideration for how they move forward.
I totally agree. I think that in that specific scenario where they lose, you know, where they lose the hybrid in this equation in Isaiah Likely, who is kind of a tight end in a wide receiver's body, or vice versa. I think either way that makes sense. I think, you know, continuing forward with 11 personnel, and, you know, I can envision them very easily taking another tight end, in the third round, kind of in that Mark Andrews, Sam Laporta mold, who had excellent production in college, is a good blocker, but, you know, you don't know if he's going to be a great one, and can just spread the field with a high volume of targets, and you just roll forward with him, Kohler, and Ricard. I think that is a good plan, and I can easily see the offense going that way, because spreading the field with Lamar and Flowers is you know, that's a great way to spread defenses out and attack.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go back to DeAndre Hopkins for a minute. What to you makes a good season for DeAndre Hopkins?
So with Braid, it was about availability and special teams play. With Hopkins, it's for me probably going to be mostly about availability, for the reasons that we talked about earlier. Him being available means that guys like Wallace and Wester and Walker aren't totally needed, but they're kind of put into a favorable position to contribute when called on. So I would say that Hopkins being available, he is a pretty, he has a very healthy track record. I know that he was suspended at one point, but other than that, I think he's only played fewer than 15 games in a season once. So him staying healthy shouldn't be that big of an ask, kind of the opposite of the Jadeveon Clowney situation, where he had a lot of trouble staying healthy before he came here. I would say him staying healthy, probably staying in the same yards per target range. Last year he was at 7.6, as you mentioned earlier. Obviously, I would like him to improve on that. We'll see how that goes. So I would say keeping around that yards per target, staying healthy, and then I think last year he was right around 600 yards. I certainly wouldn't want to see him do a whole lot worse than that. And then just proving a valuable piece when it comes to improvising with Lamar on the run, you know, when Lamar escapes pressure. And then as you mentioned as well, just kind of setting the tone for the rest of the offense with run blocking.
Okay, let's. I have a little bit different take on a good season, because I think he should suffer a pretty significant target drop. And it's a combination of things. The Ravens offense being successful, the Ravens as a team just playing much more blowout games, much more positive game script football where they run the ball, doing less total passing, more of a spread out passing, less of a focus on who converts third down. They're not going to have a set guy, I don't think. If anybody could do it, it'd be like a player like Hopkins could suddenly take over that kind of a role potentially. But they have so many other guys with Andrews and Likely and Bateman and Flowers who are all weapons. You don't want to have one set guy that you're known to really be focusing the ball out on third down. So I'll just read you what I said. Provides quality wide receiver depth in a fresh legs offense. Targets and yards are well below fan expectations, but per target results are good. 8.0 yards per target is what I like to see. And again, I think decrease in marginal targets will fuel some of that. With 40 to 50 targets on a 17-game basis. I don't know how many games he'll play, but I think for a good season, he probably need to play at least about 13 or 14 for me to consider it a good season. Provides value on extended plays, no worse than an average run-blocking player who has been marginal since he left Houston. So that's something he needs to step up his game at. I don't think the Ravens will let him not step up his game as a run blocker and continue on the way he's been doing the last few seasons.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a very fair assessment for where the Ravens would expect to see him in a good season. Moving on to where I see him in a great season, I do kind of have a different spin for this. I would like to see him become a reliable red zone target for Lamar. I know that there are a lot of options there, but as a bigger body who hasn't historically been afraid to go over the middle, that's kind of what I would look to for him. I would look to him to play at least 15 games in that scenario, and then really no drop off as far as yards. So at least 600. Probably, 8 to 10 touchdowns. And then the big thing for me, and where I would put a different spin on it, is I would really, really want to see a productive postseason player. He has been productive in the postseason in the past. He really wasn't at all this past postseason. 3 catches on 8 targets for 29 yards and a touchdown across 3 games. I don't think anybody, at least anybody in their right mind, would point to DeAndre Hopkins as the reason the Chiefs lost the Super Bowl. but if that had been a close game, I think that the spotlight would be on him a little bit more for not having a better postseason, because you could certainly argue that that's by far the main reason why the Chiefs brought him in last year. I don't remember exactly what they gave up to get him from Tennessee, but they didn't have him in mind, to win the division. They knew they were going to do that in all likelihood. They got him for the playoffs, and in that regard, he really didn't fulfill his end of the bargain.
Yeah, that's a really good point about that. I didn't look at the the postseason. I'm going to push back on one red zone component. We look at big bodies that occur on the Ravens. The Ravens do have one or maybe two, if you want to include Isaiah Likely in this group, big body. I'm really thinking of Andrews. That's a big threat in the red zone. But the Ravens don't need big-bodied threats because basically Lamar scans left to right, looks for a vector to throw a football directly, and waits for separation to occur by extending the play. And he can afford to do that like pocket passers can't. Pocket passers throw a lot of fade routes into the end zone. We saw that a lot with Flacco. Develop good touch on throwing it to that back right side pylon a lot of the time to try and find somebody. Lamar wants to see the route break open, then wants to throw to space where his receiver is the guy, only guy who could possibly catch it. And there's high probability he does. And he very rarely throws up an interceptable ball in the end zone. That's why I'm not buying the need for a red zone threat from Hopkins, but that's okay. I mean, he's still a conversion on third down, extended play threat. Love him in that regard. I think the Ravens are probably not in need of another red zone threat in particular. But let me tell you what I've got for a great season is that he stays healthy and takes an expanded role with effort in the run game, play on third down, and extended play availability / mind meld. So he's got the same relationship with Lamar that, you know, we saw Andrews have a couple of years ago. I hope that doesn't lead to a bunch of marginal targets. But then he also could provide something that Beckham did, which is some veteran savvy to draw some penalties that frankly were just some unbelievable things Beckham was getting away with when in his year with the Ravens. I want him to lead the wide receiver room you mentioned tone in the run game, but I think tone across the board would be good. Avoid diva characteristics. If anybody can talk to a young player about why it's not appropriate to have diva characteristics in this situation, his set of experiences wandering across the NFL from some very successful teams to some very unsuccessful ones was right up there in terms of valuable life experience. And I hope he imparts some of that. I want him to have full support for a fresh legs offense, if that indeed is what Monken wants to run. I think it is, but we'll see. And I think in a great season, he gets about 8.5 yards per target, maybe 65 targets at the top end. And I want to look, I thought he had 80 targets last year. Well, you know, he did, and ain't no way that's happening again. I mean, no way in hell. But I see 80th percentile, he gets maybe 65 targets and 550 yards. And I think if they come to the end of the year and the Ravens are seriously considering a 2026 extension, I think that generally means that DeAndre Hopkins has had a great year. The other thing it could mean is that there's been some disaster with the guys behind him on the totem pole, that Wallace might have fallen off in some manner that the team can't live with, but more likely that Walker and Wester are not the players that they hoped they would be. And they're scratching for answers with the loss of tight ends to figure out, hey, how do we fill this gap in receiving for 26?
That's a great point. I really had not thought about life with Hopkins after this coming season, but you know, that's a really good point. I don't think he's going to be ready to retire by any stretch after this year. And if he shows that he has anything left in the tank, I think he's definitely going to want to continue playing. And to your point, you know, a lot can change in a year, but based on, you know, the writing on the wall, this is probably an offense in 2026 that he could look to be a contributor to again, which is really interesting. I hadn't kind of considered that part of the calculus.
Looking back at Odell Beckham I think my 65 target number is probably pretty reasonable. Odell Beckham in 14 games in 2023 had 64 targets for the Ravens. I just wouldn't see him being utilized more. And Odell was pretty productive on a per target basis. The problem is it didn't nearly meet the contract. And Hopkins, that won't be a problem at all if he has that level of production in that kind of target share.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with Beckham, I don't want to say it was sort of destined to fail, because I think that's unfair, but coming in with that contract and I don't know, he it was just so weird because when he had last played before joining the Ravens, it was with the Rams in the Super Bowl when he was such a crucial member of that Super Bowl winning team, despite getting hurt relatively early in the game. He managed to have, I think two catches for quite a few yards and possibly a touchdown. But yeah, that was just weird. It was an aging receiver coming off of a missed full season and paying him a lot of money for 1 year. And I don't know. I think destined to fail is a little bit strong. I think most Ravens fans feel that team should have won the Super Bowl. And if they had, you know, he would have figured to be a big part of that postseason, which of course he was not in the loss to the Chiefs.
All right, Dan, always a pleasure talking football with you. I'm glad we had an hour here and change here to talk about these two players. Lots of the discussion about DeAndre Hopkins, a good amount about Bo Breed as well. And I think your points are very interesting in terms of how he might be used and the likelihood that he probably gets a chance given his importance on special teams to the Ravens. So if you just somehow came in on the end of this and maybe that's due to some fast forwarding and whatnot, I think it's worth going back and listening to the Bo Breed talk that Dan made early. But Dan, tell us, where can people talk football with you online if they want to?
Yeah, absolutely. And as always, Ken, thank you so much for having me. These were two really fun players to talk about. I think lots of Maryland Terps fans are going to be really listening thoroughly to that Bo Breed segment. But I'm on X at DRE8820.
All right. Other folks out there, this is Film Study Short Season. If you'd like to be on a show and have something you're passionate about with regard to Ravens football, I'll be trying to do about one per week that are woven in with this expectation series that'll take up most of the next 8 weeks or so that lead up to training camp. So I'd love to hear from you and love to get you in on the schedule during that time. Dan, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks so much, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21+ only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. KATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.